What's up? What's up, everybody? Hope you have all been well. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the JDB podcast. This is take two. I was like 5 minutes into my last one and something with my sound program started glitching and fucking up. So I'm going to start it over again. And if it does it again, I'm going to fucking snap. So for those of you who've never been to the site and you just found the podcast, johndoebodybuilding.com. You can read some articles there that might help you. You can learn a lot. And if you're looking for anybody for hire or to do a consult with or a formal program, I do all that shit, man. I do diets, training, stacks, you name it. johndoebodybuilding.com. All right, so let's start this one off with a review on a pair of headphones. There's this little ghetto-ass cheap pair of headphones that kick fucking ass, okay? I'm partial to these headphones because I've had expensive headphones in the past. One pair got stolen out of my Jeep and fucking assholes drained my battery. They left the door open and they took my headphones. I had them for a week. I think they were Sony's, like noise-canceling expensive headphones, you know, a couple hundred dollars. This is before I realized that the big cover that went over my ear was going to get a bunch of sweat on it and probably piss me the fuck off anyway. So fuck them. Really just pissed they were stolen, but yeah, fuck them. And then I don't do well with, what do you call them, earbuds. I don't do well with those because I think the Lord blessed me with misshaped ear canals. So I got to shove those damn things in my ears so much that they hurt and they still don't stay in. And I know there's different attachments, you get different rubber. No, fuck it. None of them work. My ears don't work with them. And I see a lot of people with these things that they're falling out of their head. They'll lose one on the gym floor. They'll stop the set in the middle of their set to reach down and grab their fucking AirPod or whatever. And fuck those things. I don't like them. And they're very expensive for something that you're just going to potentially lose or take to the gym. So what is a good set of headphones that's lightweight? You don't know they're on you. They're Bluetooth compatible, or you know they work with. What the fuck am I trying to say? They're Bluetooth. They're Bluetooth headphones. They hold a hell of a charge. You can go to the gym 5, 6, 7 fucking times on one charge. Awesome headphones for under $20, and that, my friends, would be the J-Lab Rewinds. J-Lab Rewinds. They look like retro headphones from like the 80s, early 90s, with the little foam things. They look just like retro headphones, but they're wireless. They kick ass. I bought a pair of these things like 10 years ago. I got like 8 years out of them. I mean, they were so great. The reason they finally started coming apart, the actual housing to the headphone unit itself was coming apart, but they still work. And that was the only reason I had to replace them. And I got them back then for like $20. So now they're even cheaper. The last pair I bought was $17. On Amazon, with shipping included, the shipping, I think it was free, $17. The sound quality is really damn good. They hold a hell of a charge. They're lightweight and they're one piece. You don't have to worry about this piece in the right ear and the other piece in the left ear and this one falls out. I love the damn things. When I first started wearing them years ago, they weren't real popular. And everyone was like, dude, you know, the 80s call that wants his headphones back. And I'm like, hi, fuck you. These are nostalgic, bitch. These are what I used to wear back in the day. You know, I'm bringing this style back. But yeah, J-Lab Rewind retro headphones, they kick ass. I mean, they're lightweight and you wouldn't even know they're on your head. They're not a bother. I really, really like these things. But see, I'll tell you where I fucked up. I tried to switch to something new and innovative. I bought these bone conduction headphones, they're called. Which I will say, they're kind of cool. They don't go in your ears. They generate sound through like your fucking temples or I don't know, whatever. They rest in front of your ears. And I think that they're good for runners or cyclists or people that still want to be aware of things that are going on around them, but they still want to listen to music. Well, here's my gripe with these things. I bought a pair of Shocks. They were like, what are they called? Open Ear Pros or Open Air Pros, something like that. They don't hold a charge for shit. I got them on sale for like $125. They were normally $179. I got them on a sale around Christmas time. And the charge is so fucking poor. It states that they'll play for 10 hours. 10 hours, my ass. I can go to the gym like once or twice and these things are dead. Completely dead. I don't like where the on-off button is. I can't put them on my fucking head and turn them on with just like a finger, with like muscle memory and knowing where the button is. I got to take them off my fucking damn head every single time, hold the button down, and then when you're doing this, you can't hear the fucking voice that comes on. It's like, yeah, battery low, you're fucked. You can't hear that shit. So I realized one day, I tried to like them. I tried to like them, and one day I was like, man, fuck these damn things. Fuck these stupid things. I'm selling them right now. Nobody's buying them. But JLab Rewinds, JLab Rewind retro headphones, awesome fucking set of headphones, so cheap, and I can't say enough about them. If you like to listen to music when you work out, which I do, because I don't like that bitch-made shit that the gym plays, that radio-friendly bullshit. I need my Lamb of God, my Pantera, you know, I need my metal, man. I need my metal. So, yes. So that's the first product that I'm going to review. Okay, on to something a little more bodybuilding related, something I've been trying, okay, because I always share what I try. I ordered some injectable amino acids. Now, injectable amino acids have been around for decades, despite what you may or may not think. They've been around a long time. Acquiring them was kind of the search. So, I'm not going to tell you where to get them, but I'm going to tell you the name of it. Mass Monster. Mass Monster 570 milligram injectable amino acids. That's all you need to know. Do a search. So, this here is a 20 milliliter vial that has L-arginine in it at 100 milligrams, L-citrulline at 100 milligrams, L-ornithine at 100 milligrams, and I'll have to research that more. I'm not quite familiar with that one. Glutamine, L-glutamine at 100 milligrams, L-glycine at 50 megs, L-lysine at 50 megs, BCA 2-to-1 blend at 15 milligrams, and taurine at 50 milligrams, okay? 570 megs per milliliter. So I decided, you know what? Oral amino acids did fuck all for me. You know, I've tried the Extend, the BCA powders that you mix with your gallon of water you carry around throughout the day, like everyone that's dieting does, because they think somehow they're going to look so much more muscular drinking these amino acid powders. And it never really did shit for me. It really didn't. I can say that my muscles are fuller on this stuff. I was trying to find the conversion between what they put in oral amino acid and or a BCA powder and the lower amount in the injectable amino acids, because, I mean, obviously it's going to be more effective at a lower amount you're injecting it. And I didn't know how much was actually lost through administering this shit orally in a powdered form. Probably a lot, if not all of it. So with the injectable aminos, I said, I'm going to start with a 1C, you know, I do it pre-workout. And at first, I will say, like, the first week I was doing it, there was a few days in there I didn't use it, and I really didn't know whether it was working or not. So then the next week I took it, I said, I want to do this every day. I'm going to do 1 milliliter, even if it's a day I'm off, I'm going to do 1 milliliter every day. I will say that my muscles are a lot fuller. The pumps are a lot better. Some of the stuff that's in this shit is also in your pre-workouts. There's other blends that were at this place that I went to get Mass Monster injectable amino acids, 570 milligram blend. There you go. There's a free one. So far, really good. Now, I want to say it was about $50. And I think that, you know, you could probably get close to a month out of it, right? At least 3 weeks. And I think that it's a good tool to use. And I think that after using this compared to the oral aminos, I'll never use oral aminos. I mean, they just did fuck all for me. This, I can actually notice I am a lot fuller. And I think that for somebody dieting, that it would prove to work even better. So I will say that injectable amino acids are two thumbs up. And like I said, these things have been around for decades. Guys in the golden era would use this shit. It's not something that's really popular or really talked about a lot, but I'm a researcher and I'm an experimenter. That's the next thing I wanted to talk about was that. All right, so on to the main topic or topics of this podcast. I want to talk about HGH, insulin resistance, and you know, glucose supplements or supplements that help glucose or carbohydrate transport and keeping your insulin resistance down. Now, I may kind of be all over the map on this one. There's a lot of things that I want to talk about that have to do with this. And I talk about, like I mentioned, HGH, because that kind of ties into this whole thing. And what you have to understand, this is the first thing I'm gonna bring up, is your body, as you age, naturally gets shittier with utilizing carbohydrates and being able to transport them. Naturally, you will become slightly more insulin resistant as you age. Now, some people have run anabolics and you know, growth hormone and insulin. You motherfucker. Did you just fuck up again? All right, there we go. Some people have run these things and they've discontinued them and they're fine. Everything kind of goes back. There's other people that have experimented with insulin that are not diabetic. They're not insulin resistant. They've taken insulin. They've gotten off the insulin after like a month on, and their fasting glucose was very high, you know, over 200. One guy over almost 3, I think. And then and they've returned, all right, in due time. And some people don't return. Some people become more and more insulin resistant, or their bodies stop producing insulin, which is my case. I'll talk about that more in a minute. And that's part of how I kind of got into this whole thing. So I don't talk about this much, but I am diabetic. I do have trouble, you know, controlling my glucose, and I do take insulin. I'm an insulin-dependent diabetic. I take a 24-hour insulin. I take Lantus, and I take a fast-acting insulin, or rapid. I take Humalog, and normally I have to take this every day. I don't think I got this way from anabolics or from growth. I didn't use a lot of growth before this. I used it a few times, but I wasn't one of these guys that stayed on GH. I think that a lot of this it was a perfect storm in my situation, that it had a lot to do with extremely elevated cortisol levels from really, really bad sleep, a lot of stress. There was probably some days where I should have been taking a nap or resting and taking a day off the gym. And like a machine, I was just programmed to train. Didn't matter whether I had 8 hours of sleep or 1 hour of sleep. I was just programmed, man, like a fucking machine. And I think that caught up with me. And on top of that, I was eating a lot of food to get bigger. So at my biggest, I was 263 pounds. I'm 5'9". I wasn't really cut, but I wasn't fat either. I was like a walking fucking wall. I was one of those guys, you know, with a t-shirt on that people would have been like, that guy's fucking huge. Holy shit. You know, because I'm only 5'9", right? So to weigh, you know, 263 at 5'9", mostly muscle, was pretty big, at least in my opinion. I was eating a lot of starch from potatoes, a lot of rice. Of course, there's starch in rice. I mean, I was eating, you know, sometimes 6-8 cups of rice a day. I can't even tell you the portion of potatoes, you know, not, maybe not together, but it was usually one or the other. You'd like potatoes or rice. And then, so about 12 years ago, my body started giving me shit. I started losing a lot of weight and I couldn't explain it really, right? It was like unexplained weight loss. And I was extremely fucking thirsty, and the thirst got worse as the day went on. So like by late evening, I could slam like 5 bottles of water in a row, and it was like, what the fuck? Like, why am I still thirsty? Well, I was thirsty because when you're diabetic or insulin resistant or maybe even pre-diabetic, your body wants to take in extra water to dilute the sugar that's circulating around your bloodstream and get rid of it. That's why you piss more when you're diabetic and maybe, again, maybe even pre-diabetic. I say maybe. Sometimes you're pre-diabetic, you don't know it. A lot of bodybuilders are pre-diabetic or full-blown diabetic, and they don't know it. I can tell you right now, without a shadow of a doubt, there's a lot of professional bodybuilders that are straight-up fucking diabetic, all right? They're just not talking about it because, probably for the same reason that I don't talk about it much, is you don't want people to think that you're this medical case, that something's wrong with you, that you're inferior in some way, or in the case of guys that have sponsorships, Jesus, man. I mean, you won't want anyone to know you're diabetic, right? I mean, you might get dropped by Muscle Tech or I don't know, fucking names of supplements. Right? What are supplement brands right now? I'm at a loss for the brands. Muscle Tech, Redcon One. They do a great job at advertising, don't they? Redcon One. They're number one with advertising. Supplements are good shit too, though. I like those. I don't like, you know, I'm not a big supplement guy, but the ones that I do use, the electrolyte supplement they have, the protein powder that's lactose free, it's called MRE, in the pre-workout, they're great supplements. Anyway, I'm getting off on a tangent. But anyway, so the long and short of what I'm saying is I don't think that I'm one of these guys that just used growth a few times, used a few weeks of insulin here and there, and all of a sudden, boom, you're full-blown diabetic. I think it was a perfect storm between stress, shit sleep, you know, eating to grow. And I will say that I think maybe anabolic steroids can play a part in it. Now, a lot of these studies are really inconclusive. And I mean, corticosteroids definitely do it, you know. Like, what's that one oral steroid, prednisone, that a lot of people take when they're sick or whatever, or people that have cancer, it's kind of an automatic that they're automatically put on like glucose disposal agents or possibly insulin because it will make them diabetic. But that's my story. When I found out that I was diabetic, well, I found out I was pre-diabetic about a year before I was diabetic. And my A1C came back at like 6.4. And your A1C, for those of you that don't know, is an average of your glucose levels for about 3 months. It's probably really more about two. They say three. So anything over, I want to say like 6 or 5.9 is considered pre-diabetic. So the doctor put me on metformin. Metformin is like an oral glucose disposal agent. I was supposed to take like, I think it was 1,000 milligrams a day of metformin. And back then, I'm thinking, well, shit, I don't want to take this because I'm going to have to rely on it. And it just, to me, I was trying to fight it. I was like, hey, you know, I can out-diet this shit. Like, this will fix itself. And so several months went by, and I almost kind of forgot about it until I started getting the symptoms of, like, high blood sugar. And I started losing the weight like crazy. I mean, Jesus, man, I could eat, like, a large pizza. And then wake up the next morning, I'm 3 pounds lighter. I'm like, what the fuck? So I was coming down from, oh man, I was like 230-something, 240 pounds. And then by the time I finally went to the doctor, I was down at 208. And I'm like, all right, something's wrong. So I went to the doctor and, you know, the words out of his mouth were, holy shit. Like when he looked at my labs, he's like, holy shit. I'm like, holy shit, what? And I kind of knew what was coming. I actually kind of told him, I was like, yeah, I'm probably diabetic. He's like, dude, your fasting glucose is like fucking 380. And I was like, okay, that's not good. So I had to go back in for a glucose tolerance test where you drink like 100 grams of this dextrose fruit punch drink. And you got to hang out there like for the next 4 or 5 hours. And they're supposed to draw your blood like every hour and see where your glucose is and see if it's returning. Well, anyway, I drank that 100 grams of dextrose. My shit shot up to over like 500, and they ended up having to give me like 10 units of insulin to get it back down. I didn't even make it through the fucking test. They're just like, yeah, you're diabetic. I'm like, okay. Then I started to go home from the doctor's office. Well, then I started going hypo because it was, I guess, too much insulin. And I was like, what the fuck, man? So then I get home, and I'm eating carbohydrates, and then I shoot back up to like 400. And, you know, I'm like, well, what do I do? You know, I was naive about this shit. So I went to the ER and there was going to be like, there was a crazy wait in the waiting room. And I was so hungry. And in my mind, I'm thinking, no, you can't eat. Like, you can't eat. You know, don't eat. You'll make it worse. So I called my doctor. I had a cell phone number. He's a pretty cool guy. I said, look, man, I'm going to be hanging out here all day. What should I do? He said, no, you don't need to hang out there all day. He said, go home. Take this, do that. I can't remember exactly what he said. So then my journey with insulin and learning about glucose control really began. I may not be 100% on the order of things, or there may be some details that I'm leaving out here because it was a long time ago that this started. It was really quick for me to get on fast-acting insulin. And then the slow-acting insulin came in, you know, shortly after to try to kind of like level me out more so I wouldn't have to take as much rapid insulin. So now everybody tells you that when you're diabetic, you know, don't eat any carbs, don't eat any carbs. Well, I will tell you that that doesn't fucking work for me. For some reason, fats raise my glucose almost, well, not as bad as carbs, but pretty bad. Because what the fats do is they slow the carbohydrate digestion. So if I was to eat something like, say, a ribeye steak or some bacon or something that's, you know, high in fat, and I take the same amount of insulin that I would take, let's say I had a few carbs with it, and I take the amount of insulin that I should take per, you know, the carbohydrate grams, right? So like, let's say 1 unit for every 10 grams of carbohydrates. That's what most beginners do that are like taking insulin for bodybuilding, but they're not diabetic. That's, as a rule, I just said it. 1 unit of insulin for every 10 grams of carbohydrates, right? That's what I was trying to say. I don't know why that was so hard. So if I had fats with that meal, what would happen is like I could check my blood sugar, say, 20 or 30 minutes later, or maybe even an hour later, and it still looks high because the fats are preventing the carbohydrate digestion. But then what happens is when my body does decide to use the insulin and digest the carbohydrates, my blood sugar can drop like a fucking rock. So I was going through this huge learning process with all this stuff. And I think to this day, it's going to be an ongoing learning process, you know, which is why I know so much about this. If any of you guys are diabetic, I will tell you that you can still be a great bodybuilder. You can still get cut and you can still get big. Don't let it hold you back. All right. It got me down for about 2 days. And then I was like, you know what, dude, fuck this. You know what it's like to diet. You know what it's like to train hard. And this is what you love to do. And I'm not going to let it get me down. And I'm going to push through to shit. And I'm going to be the baddest ass motherfucker that uses insulin that I can be. So I know a lot about this stuff, about some of the oral drugs, you know, the glucose disposal agents, and the insulin. And that's going to lead me into, you know, what I'm going to talk about in a few minutes, semaglutide. I just started that. A lot of people are taking that for like weight loss and dieting. I could probably get a prescription for it, which I think I'm going to try. But I just started it, but I'll get more into that in a minute. All right. So what I was originally talking about is like your insulin resistance does get shittier as you get older, and it can get shittier if you're someone that's been bodybuilding, you know, half your life or most of your life, and you've just been eating a lot of food to try to grow, and your pancreas can stop producing insulin, okay? That's my case. My pancreas just said, fuck it. And one of the signs that some shit might possibly be about to go wrong is you'll go hypo, right? Hypoglycemic. Hypo's low, hyper's high. You'll be hypoglycemic and you think that you need more carbohydrates than the average person. For some reason, you're just dropping like a rock. And you are at the time. But the reason you are is because it's a safety mechanism. Your body is dumping this shit and like using its all its reserves because something on the flip side is about to fucking happen. And if I could go back and do anything differently throughout the years, number one, I would have realized that I was a pretty big dude and a pretty lean and big dude when I was, you know, 200, 220 pounds. Why I thought I needed to weigh 260 is kind of beyond me. I tended to look at guys like in magazines and like the guys that were like larger than life. And that was my standard. My standard was really nobody in person for the most part. I mean, you see like one or two really big dudes in the gyms here and there, but usually I was the biggest guy in any gym I went to. So I wasn't looking at other people in the gym. I was looking at like big, big guys thinking, okay, that's, you know, that's where I need to be. Like that's where I need to be big. Not realizing that I was pretty big and there's people that are 200 or 180. There's middleweight bodybuilders that look really fucking big because when it's all muscle and you provide this like illusion, this like 3D look, and you can look really damn good. I didn't need to weigh 263 fucking pounds to have that look. I just didn't need to do it. And the killer is it wasn't like I was 260 something and then just diagnosed as diabetic. I had cut back down, and guess what I cut back down to? I cut all the way back down to like 205. All right. So why the hell did I need to gain almost an extra 60 pounds if I was going to cut back down to almost the same fucking thing anyway that I cut down to, starting to diet at 225, right? It had gotten to the point with me where the juice wasn't worth the squeeze. But like I was saying earlier, a lot of these studies I don't think are conclusive that anabolic, the constant anabolic steroids can lead to insulin resistance. But I think it might can do it. I'm not going to discredit that in my case, but like I said, I really think, honestly, it was a perfect storm. You know, a lot of people ask me like, well, how, why? And I'm like, dude, I just thought it'd be fun. You know, I just decided to make myself a diabetic because I thought it'd be fun. I used to make fun of people who are diabetic. It was like, fat fuck, you turn into a diabetic eating fucking Cheetos and shit. Well, I can tell you right now, I was someone that always ate very clean, but I was eating incredibly large portions of stuff. And I talk a lot about carbohydrates. I am not a keto guy. And I still believe to this day that carbohydrates are number one for muscle growth. It's not protein. It's carbohydrates. And it would probably take a whole nother podcast to explain exactly why I believe that. But, you know, in a nutshell, carbohydrates have a lot to do with, you know, fluid transport to the muscles. The muscles are mostly fluid, you know, nutrient absorption. Glycogen, you know, they provide pump, all right? I think when you take away a lot of the carbohydrates, you take away a lot of the pump and the muscle volume, and if you do it for too long, you do get catabolic. I still stand behind that belief, all right? And a lot of people think, well, you know, of course you think that. That's what got you into the situation to begin with. No. No, it's kind of apples and oranges, but it's kind of not. But I still stand behind that belief that carbohydrates are number one. But if your body's not utilizing carbohydrates, you got to find a way to do that, all right? So it's always a good idea, just prick your finger. You can buy a glucose a test kit, you know, like a CVS or a Walmart. You can get one for like $10, $20. It includes like 10 test strips. They're really easy to use. You just prick your finger. Do it first thing in the morning when you're fasted and make sure that you come in under 100. You want to come in under 100. If you're over 100, then you're getting in pre-diabetic territory most of the time. There is an exception. I have seen exceptions to this. I've seen guys that come in, you know, 105, 110 in the morning time, and then as the day goes on, they normalize. Now, if you're one of those guys, you need to have an A1C test done. You need to have lab work done. And the A1C is a more, you know, accurate measure of that. So if you're getting older, and I'd say, you know, maybe over the age of like 35 or 40, if you're getting bodybuilder old, like you've been in the gym since you were like a teenager or whatever, or college, and you've been at it a long time, you've been eating a lot of food, number one, make sure your blood sugar is normal in the morning time, fasted. You can also do it 2 hours after a meal to see if it's coming down. Now, most people, when they eat a meal, it is going to be a little bit elevated, but it should return. That means your body's utilizing insulin, all right? Whether it's resistance or production, it means your body's utilizing it. If it doesn't return, then you might want to take further steps to checking everything and making sure, you know, everything's on the up and up. HGH use, okay? HGH is a double-edged sword. I don't think HGH is the end-all, be-all. I'm just going to say that right now. A lot of guys talk about HGH like it's the best thing since a slice of bread. It works. It works great for recovery. It works great for sleep. It works great for muscle volume and for growth if you're using enough of it. But it's not this end-all, be-all drug. And the double-edged sword with GH is GH can fuck up your insulin resistance if you use a lot of it and if you're on it a very long time. So the way I tell beginners or people that, even if you're not a beginner, the way I tell a lot of people to use growth is when you first get on it, you have this priming period where you got to be on it like 5-6 months, all right? It's the long game with growth. And the reason it's the long game is because growth is metabolized into IGF-1 relatively quickly after you inject it, all right? You have this exposure window that's very short, and the way that your body naturally secretes growth hormone is in pulses. So you have to have enough of these pulses to actually see the results, like to see what growth is doing for you. So it takes a while to have enough of these exposure times to growth to actually start seeing it. In the beginning, you'll notice like the improved sleep, the recovery. It does kind of improve your skin. I always look younger when I'm on growth. I could take a picture like with the family or something, or have my picture taken, and I can see it, you know, and you're your own worst critic, but I can see it. You clearly look younger on growth. After that initial priming period, I'd say five months, right? 20 weeks. It is not a bad idea to take a 30-day break. Take a 30-day break from growth. This is another reason why I think the 5-on-2-day-off pattern with growth is the best way, because those 2 days off, you are giving your body some sort of normalcy without introducing that to your body. It's all about insulin resistance. I know a lot of people think it's a way to make your growth last longer, and that's why, you know, you should just, if you have the money, do it every day. Don't take the 2 days off. I believe in the 2 days off. And that 30-day break will really allow your body to kind of return to normal. But when you resume it, it's more effective, right? So like if 2 units really wasn't doing what it used to do, you know, and you want to increase to 4, you take that 30-day break and all of a sudden 2 units seems like it packs a little more punch. You know, does that make any sense? Your body's a little more receptive to it. And also your body's had that month to operate a little more normal. The 30-day break and then the resumption of growth, it's not like you have to start the priming process all over again. Like once you get that initial like 5 months out of the way, I recommend a 30-day break and then you can resume it. When it comes to using growth at more than like 2 or 3 units a day, I recommend doing it in like blasts where, all right, so the next 4 to 6 weeks or whatever, we're going to go up, you know, to say 5 units a day. I don't think you should just go up crazy high. I think those levels take time for your body to adjust to. So like nobody should just start taking growth as a first timer and start just popping like 6-8 units a day. It's just fucking dumb. Everyone should be starting at like a couple units a day. Do that for a few weeks, see how they do with it, and go up very slowly, you know, a unit at a time. Every time you change the growth dosage, your body has to reacclimate. So if you're at 2 units, okay, and most people initially hold fluid with growth, they do hold a little fluid overall with growth, but every time you change the dosage and go upwards with it, it's like your body has to go through that adjustment like all over again. So let's say you go from 2 units to 3 or 4. Now all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, I'm holding water like a motherfucker. Well, yeah, your body has to readjust everything. But the thing with growth is you do want to take a break. And the refractory level of growth, like it's a little better than test. Okay. It's not like when somebody comes off test and they're doing a traditional PCT and then their natural test is in the dirt for a little while, and then it might come back to where it was before. It might not. It might be a little lower, or they might not come back at all if they've done enough of it. Growth seems to be a little bit easier to get back. Now, it's going to be lower as we age anyway, but it does seem like, you know, if you've ran growth a few times before for 5 months here, 6 months there, and then you stop for a little while, you could go get your IGF-1 levels tested. And for those of you that are kind of new to this, the IGF-1 is the measure of, you know, the level of growth hormone in your body. It's not like you just get a growth hormone test. It's an IGF-1 test. You can still come back like middle of the range, maybe even middle high, after you discontinue the growth. It is a little bit easier than the test to recover. But let's get into more, let's talk more insulin resistance, all right? If you're using growth and you start to go up with the growth, or you start to really go up with the growth, like, you know, some guys are doing 10, 15 units of growth a day, which I would never get that high. I think the side effects are nasty. I think the side effects from growth are nastier than gear, you know, in almost any event, once you get that high with it. you know, whether you're sleeping all fucking day, your skull's getting bigger, your feet are growing a size or two, or you do become insulin resistant, all right? When you get higher with growth, a lot of times the guys are using insulin to counteract that, to counteract the insulin resistance to keep from becoming diabetic. It doesn't always work so clear cut and dry though. There's a lot of guys that ran growth and then they discontinue it, or they have to discontinue it because their fasting sugars are coming in like sky high. And when they try to cease everything, that whole cocktail of insulin and growth and possibly metformin or the supplement berberine, which is very similar to metformin, in my opinion, better, they're all over the map. They're screwed, right? They don't come back. Their insulin resistance doesn't come down and normalize. And so this is the reason a lot of guys do become diabetic, especially guys that have used a lot of growth hormone or growth hormone for a long time. All right. So some oral supplements that you can take. You can take, like I said, metformin. I never liked what metformin did to my stomach. I felt like the sides of metformin were worse, and I think that it's a little more hard on your liver. There's a supplement called berberine. Its dose is the same as metformin. It's 500 milligrams a dose. That's typically what that's what a lot of metformin is. There's some of them that are, you know, more, 1,000 milligrams. But as a standard, it's neck and neck. It's 500 to 500. So you could take, like, say 500 is a safeguard, or just something to help utilize your nutrients better. If you're not diabetic, and if you're taking something like that, I don't think that's going to fuck you up. Is this something I'd stay on like all the time? No, but I don't think that's going to fuck you up the way that somebody taking insulin could possibly get fucked up. So you have that, and then you do have, you know, insulin. But the one that is fairly popular right now that seems to be, I've just started it, all right? So I'm only going to give you my upfront experience with it, and I'll do an update on this as time goes forward, is semaglutide. And semaglutide is, it's in the same category as the drug Victoza for diabetics. Most commonly type 2 diabetics take this stuff. I'm actually what you would probably call a type 1.5. I'm someone that's an insulin-dependent diabetic but developed it later in life. Probably the least common of diabetics. Even though this stuff was originally intended for people with type 2 diabetes, I've noticed that, number one, it'll suppress the shit out of your appetite, which is why a lot of guys take it for weight loss, or girls. And what I've noticed with it is, and I just started it. I took half a milligram. And on top of not really being hungry, my workout time is normally like 10:30 in the morning. And here's the bitch of the whole thing for me as someone that's a diabetic. I'll eat and I'll take like 4 or 5 units of insulin. All right. So typically I do the insulin pre-workout. If I go to the gym and my blood sugar is say 130 or 140, all right, that would be, to a normal person, probably the average after they eat a meal, and then it will return. To me, that's the danger zone to go to a workout with, because I know it's going to fall if I'm working out, and I know it might drop too low. If I'm on the way to the gym, and let's say my blood sugar is like 180-ish, I know by the time the workout's over, it's probably going to be under 100. And it's going to be right in that range where it's like, okay, now you need to eat something. But if it's 130, 140-ish, then I might dip. I might want to do cardio after the weight workout, and I can't because I'm going to crash. I wear a continuous glucose monitor. It syncs to my phone, so that's why, you know, I kind of know what it is. I don't have to, you know, poke my fingers anymore, which is nice. But with this stuff, okay, let me tell you what this stuff does. I can eat that first meal of the day. I can eat about 40, 50 grams of carbohydrates and take no rapid insulin. None at all. I take like 20 units of Lantus first thing in the morning when I wake up, but that's a slow acting insulin, okay? Your body usually adjusts to that one before it can go hypo. Can it make you hypo? Yeah, I think so, but it's going to take a while. All right. Maybe for someone that's not diabetic, I think maybe they could go hypo on it if they use enough of it. But the Lantus is not really as strong unit for unit as a rapid insulin like Novolog or Humalog. So 20 units of Lantus, like there's guys that want to use insulin that aren't diabetic and they want to try to use it to grow. And they'll come to me and be like, yeah, I start off with like 5 units of Lantus. I'm like, what the fuck is that going to do for you? That's nothing. They're like, well, I don't want to go hypo. I'm like, nah, it's not the same. So the slow acting, and if anybody is listening to this and tries this shit, make sure you know the fucking damn difference between slow acting and rapid insulin. Because if you do this shit with rapid insulin, you could take a dirt nap. But the slow, you know, it's not uncommon to use 20, 30 units a day of the 24-hour insulin, even for someone that's a non-diabetic that's actually just using it to try to get really big. But with the semaglutide injection once a week, what I've noticed so far, and I just started this, okay, is I can take no rapid insulin with the carbohydrates my first meal. My blood sugar will be, let's say, 130, 140-ish, right? In the range that before was the danger zone because I had insulin, rapid insulin in me, and there was probably going to be some residual after the digestion of the meal, and then working out could potentially cause me to crash. Not the case with semaglutide. I can go to the gym when the blood sugar is 130, 140. I can go through a workout, bust my ass. And when I'm done, the blood sugar might be, say, 100, 110. All right. People are diabetic. They don't run. You're pissing in the wind trying to run a perfect, you know, 80, 90 blood sugar. All right. If you're doing like 110, 120 consistently, you're doing good. But I don't have that fucking panic button going off all day long. So what I was dealing with wearing the meter is the meter will set off an alarm if you're going low. Like you can set what point you want that alarm to go off. Like I think mine set at like 75. So when I get to 75, my phone makes an annoying siren sound, right? And anyone who's around me is going to look over at me like, what the fuck is that? And you know, I might have to explain it to them. You know, oh, that just means, you know, I got to eat. Usually that's all as far as I go. It's something on my phone. It means I got to eat. And it's giving me a warning. This is, yo, if you don't eat something in about the next 20 or 30 minutes, you may start going low. And I can handle crazy ass lows that a lot of people can't handle. I know that about myself. And maybe it's just years of dieting is the reason why. I don't know. But again, with the semaglutide, what I've noticed so far is I don't have the constant fucking fluctuations, the crazy dangerous ups and downs where, you know, 1 minute you're 200, then you take the insulin, and then you do some sort of physical activity. Next thing you know, the shit's about to crash. Then you go eat and you rebound. That's the hard part about having insulin resistance or using insulin, like in my case, is these crazy fluctuations. And I'll tell you right now, and this is the case for people that even aren't diabetic, the more insulin you use, the more water you will fucking retain and the more fat you will gain. I can tell you that right now. People that are trying to use insulin to cut with, I don't know what they're thinking. It's so counterproductive because the insulin even if you're eating, right? Let me put you like this. When you eat carbohydrates, your body releases insulin, all right? If you eat sugary carbohydrates, it releases more insulin. Insulin is directly correlated with fat storage. So this is one of the reasons why people that drink soda all day and they don't eat shit are often really, really fat, because their body is constantly dumping insulin and they're storing more fat. This is also another reason that low carbohydrate diets work so well for fat loss is the lower you can keep those insulin levels, the easier it is to burn fat. Now, I said low carbohydrate diets. Don't get that confused with ketosis. Now, we're getting into a whole gray area here with what portion of insulin and carbohydrates contribute to muscle growth and muscle retention, and when is enough enough when you start catabolizing your body because you're taking all of it away. And this is kind of individual. Based on like your body type, whether you just say ectomorph, mesomorph, endomorph, ecto, very thin, hard gainer, meso, kind of the best of both worlds. Endomorph puts on fat very easily, does very well with a low carbohydrate diet. Might be one of those people that maybe does do well with ketosis. I just think that there's a lot of people that think they're carb sensitive and they're just not carb sensitive. They're just eating the wrong kinds of carbohydrates and they're just eating shit. Okay. So, but anybody that's trying to take insulin with this idea in their minds that they're going to build all this muscle and they're going to burn fat at the same time. I've seen all kinds of articles. I've heard all kinds of crazy talk about, you know, how to properly utilize insulin to burn fat. It doesn't make sense to me. I just think at the end of the day, the more insulin in the body, the more fat that you can gain or retain. So, you know, it's not a bad idea to keep those insulin levels lower. And for people who are diabetic, the less insulin that you can take and keep your glucose looking relatively normal, the easier it's going to be to lose fat. Not all diabetics are fat. There's some diabetics that are extremely conditioned like all the fucking time because they know about diet. They know about nutrient manipulation. And I'm one of those guys. But so far, my opinion on semaglutide is really good because I'll tell you, like I took a shot of it this morning. I have taken zero rapid insulin today. None. I have not had a day like that since before I was diagnosed. Honest to God. So, like I said, I'm probably more of a type 1 type. There's a classification called type 1.5, which is like a type 1 that developed it later in life. But this is something that I could not out-diet. I was not somebody that was fat, that just could lose weight and improve my insulin resistance. Even when I was lean, my body, the production's like gone. So I kind of look at it like, well, I don't make fucking tests anymore. I got that. I'm on TRT. Don't make insulin anymore. I got that. What's next? You know, a mechanical fucking heart? I don't know. I don't want people listening to this to think that if they take any of my advice at all, like they're going to be in this situation. If anything, I'm preventing you from being in this situation. Because the one thing that kind of sucks about having to use insulin is I think dieting is harder because what happens is you get so sick and tired of dealing with these highs and lows and these crashes that you'll get to a point where you say, fuck this shit. Yo, just give me something to eat. I'm tired of this. Like you never want to eat big or eat bad until someone says, you can't have that. No, you can't have that. I mean, and I've been there. It's like, well, at the end of the day, what am I supposed to do? Just eat fucking heads of lettuce all day? What the fuck? So one other thing about that, let me just say this while I'm thinking about it. The no carbohydrate thing with the higher fats, it didn't work for me. Because what happens is your liver sometimes, through the lack of carbohydrates, will dump stored glycogen into the bloodstream is a safety mechanism, right? And let me tell you what used to happen to me. If I would go to the gym on an empty stomach after I was diagnosed as somebody that was diabetic, my blood sugar would be higher after the workout. It'd be worse. I could not figure that out for the longest time. And now I figured it out that in this case, I might be better off eating a little something than going to train. The intermittent fasting thing for a diabetic, probably not a good idea. Probably not. I would think that if you're not diabetic, it has its place for your body to utilize the nutrients. And you have more of a time frame to burn up everything before you eat again. But in the sense of whether that's a good diet or not, for most people, again, I don't like it. I don't think it is. I think you're better off preparing your meals and, you know, just eating less if you try and lose fat. But I don't know. I could go off in any of these one directions and probably do a whole podcast just based on all the elements of this shit and, you know, fat loss. But anyway, to sum it up, so far, semaglutide is very fucking promising. I mean, it's not a placebo effect. It's not by chance. I've just had a day where I've done no rapid insulin and my blood sugar has been pretty fucking damn normal. I feel better. So I think that it's an awesome thing. I know it falls in the same category as Victoza. I was starting to say this earlier, but I felt like shit on Victoza. I felt horrible on Victoza. I felt real nauseous and almost sick. So I don't really know if it falls in the same category, what the exact difference is between semaglutide and Victoza. I did not like Victoza. They put a lot of type 2 diabetics on Victoza. And when I went through my little experimental thing where I was going to try this, it's not insulin, but it acts like this. And I got to the point in the past where I was like, yo, fuck it, man. It's insulin or bust. I don't like this experimental shit. I don't like the chance of all these side effects and whatnot. I'm just going to use insulin. So this is like really, what this does is it helps your body create more insulin or better utilize the insulin that it makes. And in my case, I don't really think I make any, but maybe it's making the long acting insulin more effective. You know, that could be a case scenario here. All I know is I've taken no rapid insulin today and I feel pretty good. And it does suppress your appetite. It does definitely suppresses your appetite, but I don't really have a problem with eating. I have a problem with overeating when I have crazy shit going on with my blood sugar levels and my insulin. So I feel like this for myself is definitely a game changer. I think that it could also be a game changer for somebody that is trying to use HGH to grow. All right. Like someone that's taking their HGH up a little bit higher and doesn't want to kind of do like the full Monty with all the insulin and potentially cause long-term problems, you know, health complications. I think semaglutide is, I don't want to say less aggressive, but more leveled out, if that makes any sense, where you don't have the crazy spikes, the lows. I think it's safer. I really do. So far, so fucking good. And I'm going to see what it does. I don't know what dosage I'll eventually get up to. Maybe I'll get up to 1 milligram a week. And like I said, this is something that you inject it one time a week. I did mine in the morning, about 30 minutes before breakfast. So I'll talk more about it as time goes on. But anyway, I'm almost running up on an hour here. So that's what I got for you guys today. I know this really doesn't apply to everybody. You know, if I was someone listening to this that was, say, in my early 20s, I probably would just skip through this one or not listen to it. If you're somebody who has been doing this a long time, maybe you kind of know that you have problems with your blood sugar, or you're starting to show signs of maybe being pre-diabetic, or maybe you are diabetic, then you might want to listen to this and take some of these things into consideration. And I urge you to research more on it. You know, I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor. I can give you my personal experience with this stuff. That's really all I can do. So in any event, have your blood sugar checked. Just do it. If you're running growth and you've never pricked your fucking finger in the morning, you've been on growth a while, do it. Again, Walmart, CVS, you can buy a glucometer that comes with, say, 10 free test strips or whatever, or includes 10 test strips. It's not going to be free. You got to pay for it. It's pretty cheap, 10, 20 bucks. Prick your motherfucking finger. See where your damn blood sugar is at. And if your blood sugar is high, all right, and you've been on growth a little while, might be a good time to take a break. That's all I got for you guys. Till next time, this is JD. As always, train hard. Whether you got shit with your glucose or not, train hard. Where there's a will, there's a way. There's a workaround for everything. You just have to have persistence and never stop learning. So, all right, guys, take care.